It is Saturday, December 3rd, 2011. We're broadcasting live from Central Coast of California. This is KOSP Public Radio. In the first half of Geek Speak, we'll cover geek news. In the second half, we'll answer questions and comments about technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today's theme song is by Dave Pratara. Thank you very much for that. If you'd like to participate by giving us a song, please do so. You can find out more at geekspeak.org. Geek Speak is a Creative Commons endeavor. Share and share alike. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Miles Elam. He's a software engineer and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
And also Al Luckow, a new media architect. Hello, Al.
Hi, everyone.
So we're going to go ahead and start off the show by talking to Mr. Miles Elam. Please do tell us what's up in the geek news, that is.
Internet Explorer. We love to hate it, but it's gotten better recently. One of the things that was very striking about the newest version of Internet Explorer, version 9, was that it only runs on Vista and Windows 7. And since very few people were running Vista, it basically means if you're running IE9, you're basically on Windows 7 these days. Internet Explorer 10 is on the shelf. The previews have been available for quite some time. However, now with this new, what they're calling Platform Preview 4, it requires that you be running a development or development build of Windows 8.
Really?
Does not run on Windows 7. No word yet as to whether or not that's going to be a final word, but it would be an interesting thing to say you have to upgrade your operating system in order to get a newer browser, or that the browser and the operating system are tied together by version.
It's not necessarily uncommon in the sense that a lot of software only runs on a newer version of something.
Yes, except that if you have, for example, the newest Mac operating system, mm-hmm. or actually even the operating system from a couple of versions ago, the web browser that comes with it, Safari, does get updated to newer versions as you move along. Mm-hmm. This would mean that Windows 7, when it came out, it had IE 8 for a very short period of time, then IE 9 came out, so upgrade to that. The next version of Internet Explorer is not going to be available for any other operating system except for an operating system that hasn't been released yet.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I mean, maybe they're just planning on launching those both at the same time. I guess I'm not that surprised because companies do this with new OSs. They offer new features. They're basically saying the newer browser is available and the new features. I mean, you can't get Internet Explorer 8 for Windows 98.
I guess my problem comes from being a web developer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you want to see this browser out in the wild as soon as possible.
Yes. Internet Explorer 10 has a lot of improvements.
Because it's one of those things where you run into all these things that the newer browsers can do, and you're like, yeah, that's awesome, it's awesome. And Internet Explorer 10 can do that. And by the way, you can't run that.
There are so many companies that haven't even moved to Windows 7 yet. Yeah. They're still on XP.
Sure.
And
I'm still on Vista.
Yeah. Among those, there's still a lot of people that, especially at companies, large organizations, that are running Internet Explorer 6. So any reason that people have to keep using an older version of Internet Explorer is, for lack of a better way of putting it, a direct threat to my well-being and mental health.
Right. Okay.
Well, some of the larger corporations, for them to upgrade their whole world, you know, their whole OS, it's a huge deal.
Yeah,
sure. And so, you know, when you have a large corporation like, say, like Visa or something, and then you get a call that says, somebody's stolen all of our credit card numbers and we have to change your credit card. It's no surprise that, that it's probably because they just, you know, they're just so big, they can't, you know, to update things.
Yeah. They're busy already.
Which is fine. When was Internet Explorer 6 released?
I have no idea.
10 years ago?
Seriously? That long ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
Somewhere thereabouts.
Amazing. We're getting old.
And Chrome and Firefox are racing to release the fastest one. Do these ridiculous numbers.
Yeah, the version of Internet Explorer that's out now has about the same feature set as the other browsers year and a half ago.
Yeah, wow.
So the fact that we're having to wait for another browser that's going to get it to close to the point that they're at today is frustrating for
okay.
me.
Now, okay, the next thing is, of course, what I'm doing all the time is developing on mobile platforms. That's the, kind of been my focus. Mm-hmm. And so what the client's doing and such is interesting and all, but I'm more curious about what the mobile space is for browser support. Like, that's a much more interesting space. And to me, I mean, and they're the most of the mobile growth right now for devices is either WebKit, which is Apple's, the one that Apple uses. Mm-hmm. Actually, I guess Chrome uses WebKit too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you're seeing a lot more universality finally in a space. Basically, you develop in that environment and most mobile devices can run it, which is kind of nice. So I guess I've kind of let go as a personal concern this Internet Explorer being so horrible.
Yeah, actually in the mobile space, the big thing you have to worry about, because iOS and Android are not the only browsers out there, Opera Mini...
That one.
To some extent, Opera Mobile, although that's gotten better, but Opera Mini is the IE6 of the mobile world.
Al, you got any stories about something about mobiles?
Oh, yeah. Well, you're familiar with McAfee. They're a virus
company.
Yeah, virus.
Or I should say antivirus company.
Antivirus, yes. They detect viruses.
Well, there's some conspiracy theories.
Anyway.
Please.
So they're into viruses, and they follow up on all this stuff. They're one of the main major names in virus detection and repair and alerting and all that. Well, they came up with a study, and they've said that the Apple iOS, which is the iOS that runs on the iPhone, is safer than Android. But not just safer. It turns out Android attracted more malware in the second quarter than any other mobile platform. And malware is defined as little applications that do things like send your location or take your picture or listen to your conversations or steal your information or things like that. Now, it's by quite a stretch. Android now has 63% of the malware on mobile platforms is Android-based. It says Java ME is 20%, Symbian is 7%, BlackBerry 6%, no, others are 4%, iPhone or iOS isn't even on there because...
Symbian is Nokia's.
Right.
And the other one that you read right before that?
There's Java ME.
Where's Java ME? That would be on Microsoft's
phone. No, Java ME is on a variety of phones. It's actually sometimes along with another operating system.
Okay.
It's the ability to...
It's
run.
A Java applet
Java
engine on
edition.
Top of that. I mean, Symbian runs that too.
That one comes in second
mostly
for malware, but it's 20%, whereas Android is 63%. So it's a distant.
Yeah. Well,
second.
What is iOS doing in that space? How many viruses? And
well,
such
they're in lumped in with others 4%, but there has been no
4% is others.
There have been no. Yeah, it says there's been no reported malware actually on iOS.
Right,
on the
non-jailbroken. It says. On non-jailbroken phones, there have been no malware cases.
Well, see, this is the good side of Apple's strict enforcement policy.
Like, yeah.
There definitely is this good side where because you've got this kind of open development environment for Android, it's a lot easier to develop apps that can get in the wild.
Well, there's that, but there's also the fact that many mobile carriers are not updating the operating systems on all these phones.
Well,
that's
the other thing they say is that it's because Android is such a fragmented system. Not only are they not updating, but many manufacturers who are using Android have tweaked the system for their particular application or whatever, and they don't necessarily follow any security protocol.
Like putting their own rootkit stuff on there, for example.
So that is just going to, it's making, what McAfee says, it's making a very comfortable environment for hackers and malware developers. And
well,
viruses.
The non-updating quality about it, that's really important too.
Yeah, if you buy a new iPhone, you have the newest OS just out of the box. And you have, two and a half, three years before you stop getting updates to that OS?
Yeah, I don't know.
And you can do it, and it's automatic from the software. You plug in your phone, and it goes,
well,
there's a new update.
For people
you
that
do
sync
that?
Their phones, though. See, a lot of Apple people don't sync their phones.
Except that the new version, it does sync directly to
the
phone.
I know. The new version, they fixed that. It's just a Wi-Fi always syncing kind of thing, which is great. But the older iPhones definitely have security vulnerabilities in them, which you can't necessarily even fix without having a Mac connected to it.
Right. But when people have looked at the demographics of it, people are updating their iOS devices.
A lot more than other spaces, yeah. Well, it's also because Apple's so good at promoting their newest stuff, right?
To flip this around, many carriers, many phone manufacturers and carriers are putting out phones today that are two versions back or more of the Android.
For the Android, yes. That's how the Android, in what McAfee says, is that Apple and Google have two different approaches. Apple is proactive and focuses on prevention, and Google has decided they will deal with problems as they occur in reactive fashion.
Well, I don't think so. I think Google wants to do it. I mean, by virtue of their browser, Chrome, you can see they do try to take a proactive approach when they can.
Of course.
But there's so much pushback from the carriers.
It's so difficult when you have software that's designed like this. And you know, having been in the field and I'm designing for Android and iPhone and all this other different kinds of stuff and having to deal with all these regulations and rules and looking into each OS. Now, I was really kind of, I mean, even though I'm seeing all this virus stuff on Android and, you know, it is pretty insecure, and if you're not careful. But I do see the reason for Android to exist because...
Certainly.
You know, the thing is, there are lots and lots of the people out there who are developing mobile applications or devices that run, that need an OS. And up till now, like when you turn on your Bravia TV, it's got their own Sony's own, you know, crummy, you know...
You can't
click here to
it.
Change source and just the horrible things that they do. Android is a way that, even though it's virus ridden and there's lots of problems with it, at least it's has a consistency that people are able to get something for free. And it's kind, you can kind of know it's from a UI perspective. It, you kind of understand it when you use it. It's not just
saying,
some whole
you're
new.
That, you're saying that in the vast market of small devices having their own operating systems, it's much nicer to have a base level operating system than more people can develop for.
Right.
Because at least there's a potential for more things to be put on that.
Exactly. It's got a potential, and there's some similarities between the whole things. You're able to pick up, say you had some sort of OS on your refrigerator, it might be running on Android,
I have this, and I think you... Miles and I feel similar in this space, and Al, you maybe disagree, but I kind of have the space that the way Apple is dealing with their constricted, restricted way of putting stuff on the phone is there's something very socially dangerous about that. This idea that a corporation is so much in control of all these things that are personal to us, and that's something, there's something different there and wrong. And I think the flip side of that is it's really, really stable. It's really, really safe.
I mean, you can just choose not to get an Apple device.
Well, no, I'm not saying that it's locked in, but the issue is that the practice that they're using is very successful. It's very restrictive, and it's very much centralized in one power source, which is that corporation. Android kind of showing this potential other way, and then it has all these problems, like these malware. Mm-hmm. To me, it's depressing because I want the Android type of environment to be more successful. I want the free open source environment to work. It's sad to me that it doesn't work so well.
It's basically a necessary evil.
Maybe.
In a lot of ways, in my mind, I mean, you know, you may not like seatbelts, but you wear them because, you know, and it constricts me. I can't move around, and I like to dance when I'm listening to the radio in the car.
It's a different kind of restriction.
I have to admit, I think I'm in the middle of you two. I'm not really fully agreeing with you, Lyle, on this, just because there have been court cases now that have said you are free to jailbreak.
Yeah.
And so taking away that legal liability has changed the equation for me a great deal.
Well,
that
that's
people
a good
could
point.
Do it without. So the default is that you have this gatekeeper, Apple, and only that subset of people that actually know how to jailbreak, which is a very small subset,
what I would say, though,
is much more likely to be able to self-select to say, "I'm going to get this thing."
Okay,
that
I would rather Apple said, "You can go through us, and we're going to guarantee all these things, and it's going to be great for you, and it's going to be a wonderful experience." And here's a separate market, and once you get into that space, your carrier might turn you off. We don't know what you're going to do because we can't be assured that your phone is virus-free, malware-free, and therefore we're not going to vouch for you. But here's another way of doing this, and you can do it that way. And then another company could come in place and say, you know what, we're going to have a store as well. And as long as you only buy through stuff for us and the Apple Store, we'll guarantee you as well. Like, there could be a market space for broadening it, for not having one centralized company. Mm-hmm. And if they did that, I would be like, that's perfect. Because then I can, you know what, I'm going to stay in Apple because I like that environment. It's great. But at least from a social perspective, you're not making these personal devices that represent us. I mean, more and more our phones are going to be our vote, are going to be our, you know, tag to the greater society. And so if it goes through a funnel, it's just that
funnel's
very dangerous.
But once again, de facto, we already have that.
Yeah.
If you jailbreak your phone, you have Cydia.
I get that.
But
it's not...
So you have those repositories available.
If they did it in such a way that it was a platform design that way, I'd be much more into it. I don't really want to jailbreak my phone because how can I trust that jailbreaker? How are they making money? I mean, I'd rather see a profitable business space show up that allows other options for your iPhone.
But because people who are going around for profit can always be trusted?
No, but because competition's healthy in a capitalist environment.
True. I think, though, that's where Apple has their strength, is that they own the software and the hardware. So if they come up with a great idea, hey, let's add this.
They can do it and know that it
happens fast. You have it right away. It works on every single one of the Apple things. If you've just got it, you know, they've decided to add, you know, the thing that shoots a laser beam, you know. Okay,
right.
Oh, great, I got laser beams now, you know. Well, that's because, you know, they have that control. That's why they've existed, where a lot of these things are sort of fragmented off.
Yep. I get what, I mean, they do a good job, definitely.
And again, I also want to say that this survey, you know, by McAfee had to do with the people whose phones were not jailbroken. iPhones. So if you jailbreak an iPhone, you're still open to viruses. They haven't really had a lot of activity there, but that there's no control there. So
they have with regard to pirated apps. People who have decided they don't want to pay for an iOS app and mm-hmm. have downloaded from some random mm-hmm. person. Those actually, I have seen reports mm-hmm. of people getting infected by that. Mm-hmm. But once again, because jailbreaking is so uncommon, and the people who do jailbreak as
kind
a
of on
segment
top of it.
Are much more savvy than the folks who don't even know that it's an option.
If they jailbreak and something happens, they fix it quietly. They don't go, hey,
yeah.
because
I mean,
they
right.
did it.
If you know how to jailbreak your phone, you're a person who needs to go and find updates all the time.
Right.
You're technically savvy enough to, you know, be able to be on top of
it. Well, you know, jailbreaking your phone is actually extremely easy. It's really just getting an app and running it.
It's not
complicated. But the motivation behind that is probably a geek thinking, mm-hmm.
yeah.
wait a second, I should mm-hmm. be able to shoot laser beams,
right.
and Apple's not releasing
right.
that.
And I'm okay with it also from a security standpoint. I think Apple has had a really good track record in terms of only putting out technology once it's been sufficiently baked.
Right.
So, for example, there's a technology on the web now called WebGL, which allows you to do OpenGL, but just within JavaScript on a web page.
Mm-hmm. One of the students in the program that I'm working is doing an amazing game with that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful area of development that I think is going to take off in the very near future.
An interesting story on last week.
At the same time, Apple, their Safari browser, it does support WebGL on the desktop, but on the mobile space, it only supports it for iAds. And at first I was thinking like, wait, they're only supporting it for the ads. They don't support it within the browser. You know, I'm always like, you know, chomping the bit. I want to have my little game rendering engine. Yeah. But at the same time, I think of this is their test bed, and their ad vendors are much more strictly controlled than even their apps that are coming onto the system. And so to be able to see that, to be able to check that out and look for any problems that may occur there, before you finally say, okay, now we're going to enable this for the full browser widget for everyone.
Makes sense to me. Who are you? You're very optimistic about Apple's intentions. The reason why they don't have open the web GL space working on their phones in the browser is because they want to be able to have the developers develop through the App Store and receive revenue.
I disagree. I
really?
Honestly think we're going to see WebGL on the iOS.
They're just
proper.
Really coming it out slowly.
And one of the things from the previous version of iOS was that they had made updates to the JavaScript engine for speed. Like mm-hmm. I forgot what the optimizations were, but it was a much faster JavaScript engine than what was there before. But it was not made available for general Safari. It was made available for the system to use. But it was
not in the general
but
space.
Not, or rather, you couldn't like make a new widget and mm-hmm. use that. And the reason for that was because for apps within the store or the like, it was a much more controlled environment. And they needed to make sure that by introducing this new system, even though it's faster, it may have opened up some holes.
All right.
But it did show up a version or two later.
Al, awesome. Thank you, Al, for an awesome story on vulnerabilities in the Android space and just the mobile space in general is a great topic.
Android.
Let's stay on to some degree, but let's talk about mapping or something. Miles, got anything on mapping?
Sure. When looking for, let's say, the airport, like SFO, you would look on Google Maps and you'd see how to get there as quickly as possible from wherever you happen to be, even from your iOS device. But there's been some new additions made, which is, what happens if you're in that airport and you want to know which gate to go to? Well, Google Maps will show that to you now after what they're calling indoor maps. A little plug in there. And so you'll start to see where the restaurant kiosks in Google Maps.
Where's the bathroom?
And very importantly, where's the bathroom?
They should have a special button. Find bathrooms.
In the airport?
Yeah.
So you may start seeing, and the thing is, some people have worried about the intrusion of Google. Street View has come into a lot of fire, both in the U.S. and especially in Europe, for privacy questions. Sure. At the same time, it's like now it's tracking like, oh, where are the public bathrooms at?
Right.
So when you see like a robot going through the mall and it's some white, you know, multicolored robot with a camera on it.
Go up the stairs to the second floor as soon as possible.
Get away, because it's probably the Google map thing.
Hi, everyone. Welcome our robot mapping overlord. sorry, took your line. Is this thing have Street View type maps, or is it just the buildings mapping?
It's just the building mapping for there. Yeah,
yeah, well, that seems less obtrusive.
Yeah, that would be kind of interesting having. Here's the,
you know what, I've wanted
the front door to the bathroom.
I've wanted forever. I rarely go to Costco, right? There's a few things we get at that big box store for expense reasons, right? But when I do go there, I go, oh, where are things? Like, I never, you know, it's a huge place.
Yeah.
I'd love to be able to pull up my phone and go, you know, vanilla. Tell me where the vanilla is, and then have it take me to.
Honey, we can use a gallon of vanilla. I know we can use that.
And if you do that at the grocery store, you're like, all I need is a quart of milk. Uh-huh. Oh, it's in the back corner.
Yeah.
So I have to walk past
all
everything
the stuff
else.
You need back there. Imagine that. I wonder where that is.
Yeah, people are getting food, which is a lot of why people go to Costco.
Sure.
The food's way in the back with all the other items.
Yeah. Well, it's just display design.
Yep.
You know, pull them through.
There's a big business in that. It's a whole, you can get an undergree in how to design a grocery store. Al, tell us about going online, would you?
Oh, yeah. The company Pew Research is
I've heard of them.
Yes. Very well-respected church group. No, they're, they do polls.
No, actually, they do laser cannons.
Oh,
like, pew, pew, pew.
Oh, my gosh. You're so
anyway, they, this is the report from the Pew Research Center's Internet and American Life Project.
Okay. Right?
And they've done a study to find out why most people go online. And I was curious if you guys had any thoughts why most people go online. What do you think might be?
Okay, my first reason would be when I'm trying to fix something, I have to find the manual for that device so I can not electrocute myself. You know, fixing the washer, machine, dryer, mm-hmm. kit. So it's probably research on
troubleshooting something.
And finding manuals. Mm-hmm. That's my probably number one reason going online. But for most people. Well, I'll let Miles answer one, and I'll see if he hits the one that I'm thinking of.
Well, the genteel answer is shopping that people are going on there for.
I was thinking
the
of Amazon's, non-genteel.
Yeah, sure, Amazon's, shopping. eBay's, stuff like that.
And the other one starts with a...
And the other one would be porn.
Yeah, porn. That was my thought. Okay, yeah, so...
Because we've seen some of the stats on networks and stuff like
both,
that. And
cynically, we were both saying that porn is probably the number one reason, mm-hmm. or at least males.
Oh, no, I was actually thinking in terms of I've seen some of the network traffic stats.
And the traffic stats, definitely. A lot of you.
I would think news. I would think I would go,
you go for news.
For news.
So research on obscure stuff,
mm-hmm.
I guess mine. Miles is shopping. Porn, we all agree with. News. I think those are...
I think shopping beats news, yeah.
Shopping beats news? I think shopping probably beats porn, too, on reasons to go online.
It probably depends on the time of year.
Probably.
Well,
like that right now, probably shopping's right up there.
Probably shopping is a big one.
What is the number one reason?
Well, you know, they poured a lot of money into this, and it says the study has a margin of error of 3.7%.
Okay.
And they studied adults aged 18 and over, landlines and cell phones, all that kind of stuff. Is what they use to take this survey. And they have determined that most people go online for no particular reason.
Nice.
It says that's that awesome. The report found that about 53% of young adults aged 18 to 29 go online on any given day for no particular reason except for a diversion or just for fun.
This sounds so much like the previous generation saying, like, what do you use TV for? Well, I use it for watching the news, or I use it for going to the cable shopping channel, or I use it for, you know, watching sports. But there are a whole lot of people that they turned the TV on, and it was background noise while I went and did something else.
It's like a light. You know, yeah. The TV is like a light, and it's like my mom, you know, just turn the TV on to get light in the room. And, there's a show on, yeah.
That's a very expensive light.
It's like
light.
The web has become the new light.
All right. Okay, you know? So no particular...
It's just a diversion. It's just like...
a great podcast name, no particular reason.
People just go online. Yeah, or a band name.
Yeah, band name, yeah.
No, hey, man, you're no particular
it's
reason.
It's online.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a new leisure activity. Just
go online.
Went online, you know.
We're doing Geek Speak as we do every week. And in the middle of the Geek Speak show, we like to mention something that, well, it's quick and easy to talk about. We call it the Geek Bit. And this week, I think Al's got a video he's recommending.
Oh, yeah. There's a video. You ever wonder how fast a CD has to spin, like a DVD or a CD in your drive, before it will explode?
Yes, every day.
I wake up in the middle of the night. How fast does it have to go before it will explode?
You're talking about the rotational integrity of the CD.
The CD when
Except
it's spinning.
They vary so much.
I know.
Well, apparently somebody has actually figured out how fast you got to go, and then they videotaped it.
Okay. I don't care how fast, but I do want to see.
No, I care how fast.
It's 23,000 RPM.
Which is twice as fast as, or almost, I mean, it's faster than the fastest hard drive. Spin
right, it's hard drive speeds rather than
hard drives
drive
are 15,000. I think are right. the highest levels that I've seen for enterprise space.
Well, this
is it a good video?
It's I think the ending is the best part because, they're sort of scientifically approaching this. So a good portion of the video is watching the CD spin, and that part has limited attractiveness to the. Person who is looking
great.
For excitement.
Make like a 7-minute video. In the yeah. first time.
That's about what it is. So we're going to post the video, but you may want to just skip to like the last like second when it blows up.
KOSP co-sponsors the Santa Cruz Ballet Theater production of The Nutcracker. The show includes a 55-piece orchestra conducted by John Laird Granger, December 16th, 17th, and 18th at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium. Information and tickets are online at santacruztickets.com. My niece is in that production.
Ooh.
Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. Information at 423-2447. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. You can call us up right now to get on air and ask us something or kind of reference something we've been talking about. We'll take any kind of call about technology. 1-800-655-5877. Again, the phone number is 1-800-655-5877. And since I let Al have a Geek Bit, Miles, do you have a Geek Bit too?
Yes, I do. Actually, I have a couple, but I'll go really quickly.
Well, we're going to wait for calls, so you're good.
For sure. One, it's not necessarily a geeky thing, but only a geek would care, I guess the best way to describe it.
Kind of like this show.
So, a banana.
Yeah.
The fruit.
The fruit.
Yeah. What type of fruit is it? Well, it has many seeds, and it's a fleshy inner layer. So, bananas are actually berries. Did you know that? You never really think of it as a berry.
No, that is cool.
I think of a berry having one seed.
I am going to use that one.
But nevertheless, a banana is a berry.
Wait. No, let's talk again for a second. A berry has one seed.
No.
Oh, I see like a bushed berry.
Mm-hmm. Blueberries, blackberries, raspberries.
We call a banana tree. We don't call it a bush.
Except that the banana tree is not a tree.
How so?
Truly. It has no wood fiber.
Oh.
The banana plant is actually an herb, the world's largest herb, and a member of the lily family.
Wow. So bananas are a lily fruit?
Yes.
That's awesome.
This is very good information.
You're right. This is totally a geeky thing.
I'm totally not.
If you're interested in this topic, you are definitely a geek. You happen to be like a gardener or vegetable geek or something. But wait a second.
If it appeals to you.
Right. So think of the next time you're eating a banana, like you're eating a berry.
Quit monkeying around.
Wait a second. You keep going now. You're doing good. So it's a berry because the plant itself is a bush because it has no woody fiber. But a blueberry bush has woody fiber. And that's a bush. So let's be consistent here. What about a huckleberry? Huckleberry is very tree-like, but it's very much wood. You're not going to argue this point with me?
No.
You're quieting down?
Well, we have a blueberry bush, and it has no blueberries on it. What does that mean?
That's a tree.
It's become a tree.
If you'd like to call in with questions and comments about technology, or or fruits of any sort. The phone number is 800-655-5877. Of course, that's toll-free, 800-655-5877. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I've got Al Luckow and Miles Elam. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number, one more time, 800-655-5877.
The other quick geek bit, and this is mostly visual, so people, you have to go to our website to find it.
There's a few of those things. Yes.
Yeah, so Earth's location in the observable universe, you know, Earth, solar system, then the solar interstellar neighborhood, the Milky Way galaxy, local galactic group, Virgo supercluster, local superclusters, and then finally the observable universe.
Mm-hmm. I feel so
rather
small
than, than the unobservable universe.
I feel so small and insignificant. Thank you.
Right. Now, that's 13.7 billion years,
light years,
give or take. And that since that event has occurred, give or take, because time gets really
wonky
at that point.
When you grow your reference point, yeah.
So let's take that as being 1 year.
Okay.
So compress that as being 1 year. So at January, so January 1st at New Year's, you
know,
that's the Big Bang.
Mass expansion.
On December 31st at 9 p.m., the first early hominids appear.
Wow, we're older than I thought.
At 11:58, modern humans evolve.
We're a minute of the galaxy, of the universe's duration.
Yeah, awesome. Of the universe being a year. Yeah, 25 seconds ago, agriculture.
Oh, my gosh.
11 seconds ago, the pyramids were built. 1 second ago, Kepler and Galileo
figured out
that the Earth orbits the sun. 1 second ago,
man. If we're the premier intelligent species in the universe is doing a really bad job of understanding itself. It took an entire year to figure out that there's planets.
Well, I'll put these two graphs up on the our website after the show for people to take a look at. It's really fun.
Thank you so much, Betty from Monterey. Welcome to Geek Speak. Betty, can you speak louder or pick up your phone? I could barely hear you.
Okay, is that better?
Oh, that's
I've had
much
it below
better.
My chin.
That's great.
Okay, great. I changed from UVerse to Comcast, and all my contacts got Viagra ads. And I was wondering if there was any way to get that off of there.
All your contacts for the new email address?
All your contacts.
So
somebody got
into her machine and pulled her contact list
and
used it as spam.
Between the change, yeah.
Okay, and did your email address change before the two? When you were with AT&T's UVerse and then you went to Comcast?
Yes.
You had a different email address? Is the old
email
address the one that sent the spam to your friends?
No, it was the new one, I believe, because it happened with the Comcast address.
And right away? Immediately?
Yeah.
Okay, and how secure is your password on your Comcast account?
It's above medium.
Okay. What I would do with passwords, let's first start out, the longer you make the password, the better. So if you have your password be sugar water and then you add like 15 nines at the end of it, you're really good. That's a really, really good password. It's easy to remember.
Did you say?
Well, you know, 5 nines.
Okay.
You know, something like that.
Okay.
It's going to be really hard for someone to crack
that. I actually do have a few nines right now.
Well, don't tell me that. You just
reduced your
piracy.
I think I see why this happened.
All I've got is nine.
Yeah.
It's
the letter A.
So I would definitely recommend having a good, strong password. Now, let's assume for a second that someone didn't hack into your account because of your bad password. Let's assume that didn't happen. Let's assume something else happened. Miles, first off, are you on a Windows machine?
Currently? No, I'm on a Mac.
Oh, sorry.
But
Betty,
I'm on a
Betty
Windows
are you on a Windows machine?
No, it's a Mac.
Okay. All right. That helps things. Solution ideas, guys?
I actually, if it is correlated with that, it's not necessarily not the cause, but it is kind of
around
strange time.
I mean, have you signed up? If you just moved, have you signed up for anything online? Have you bought anything like from China? I mean,
no.
What have you done with that email address since you switched?
All I did was upload Adobe. Mm-hmm. And that was a couple of days after this happened.
And so you did one thing with that email address.
Actually, it was actually the change to Comcast.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether or not
the installer.
I was actually wondering whether Comcast had sold off information to marketers.
Although I'm looking at the lady that just sent me this, should I open this? And it is for my old SBC Global address.
Okay, so that sounds...
So something's on your machine has nothing to do with the ISP.
Well, no,
something
so
it's using your email client to spam everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that got on
so,
your machine.
So it sounds like the virus is happening from the old account.
It looks
is
like
your,
it.
Is your password on your old account good?
No.
Okay, that's probably the problem. So what's going on with these web interface email addresses, right, is that anybody can log into it from anywhere as long as they know the password. If the password's not very good, they can test a few times, and they can try to get to it. You just canceled your account with the company.
But the trick
so
is
they're no responsible it's
the problem is not the spam coming from her, because anybody can put anybody's email address in spam. The problem is it's her address book.
Right.
And it's everybody in your address book?
Well, I haven't heard from everybody, but probably half of them.
So let me ask you this.
Did
you have your address book inside your old web account, your UVerse account? Did you have your...
Yes.
There you go.
So that's the thing is that that's what I'm saying is that normally it used to be such that you'd have to get on the machine to get the addresses, mm-hmm. but now everybody puts their addresses on their old account.
Because I was trying to think of what could get on a Mac that would do that.
Yeah,
it's not really a Mac problem. It would probably be on...
Unless Betty's installing...
a UVerse software or
cracked Adobe products. Those normally have malware in them.
They
but you probably aren't, right, Betty?
No.
You haven't taken Adobe Photoshop without, even though you don't have a license.
No.
Okay, good.
I opened one video. So.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that most likely your old account, somebody got access to. And what you want to try to do is log into it. Now, unfortunately, AT&T doesn't think of you as a customer anymore, so you can't log into it. And that and the
I don't think it's coming from that account though.
Might be.
It's got her address book and she's on a Mac. It's most likely not a virus. Most likely someone got into her insecure old account that AT&T is not made available to anybody anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a policy issue with AT&T personally.
Yeah.
I think something's wrong.
Wait,
here.
But how would someone if she doesn't have access to it, how would anyone else have access to it?
I think what they did is they said, "Oh, this email address is no longer being used. Anybody can sign up with it." Oh, you signed up with it. Cool. By the way, here's the account with all the information that used to be in it. I think it's a problem like that. You don't think so, Miles? You think it's too complicated?
Well, our general opinion, Betty, is that it's probably not a problem with your computer.
Mm-mm. Almost definitely not.
It's probably not that.
Do you think they'll keep coming or will they just finally give up?
They'll keep coming.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there's nothing you can do about it at this point. That's the sad thing.
Mm-hmm.
What I would try to do is log into your old account, change the password to something you can't remember. If you can, if no one could use, right? But try to log into your old AT&T UVerse account with your password. Go in there and try to delete the account. First off, delete all the email addresses. Then after you delete the account, if you will, if you can achieve that, I bet you won't be able to achieve a deletion. You could change the password to be a much better password. But do not make the password the same as your new account. Once you've done that, you'll kind of ensure that no one else can log in and get that information, but someone already has. And that person wants to send Viagra ads, and they will keep doing that. The one thing you'll be able to do is that it will no longer come from your account so easily. It would be more hard for them to make it come from your account, and therefore your friends will probably won't see it. The reason why your friends saw these Viagra ads is it happened to come from someone they knew, and therefore the virus stuff didn't block it.
Yeah.
Right.
And then also, when you send out a note, say, "Hey, everybody that's on my address book from my old account, that was compromised. That was compromised. Delete my old email address. Don't use that anymore."
Yeah, and if they know how to do it, filter that old email address
to
go directly to the trash can.
Good luck, Betty, from Monterey.
I thank you kindly.
Thank you for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. From Morgan Hill, Lauren, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for your show. It's got a lot of good information.
Well, thanks.
I've got a problem with my Mac computer. I did not ever upload to Snow Leopard, and now I'm trying to move some information from Mobile Me to a new iCloud account, but I can't do it without Lion, and I can't buy Lion without buying Snow Leopard.
No,
is there any way that I can bypass this ridiculous double bill?
I think you can get Lion without Snow Leopard.
You can't upgrade. You can't upgrade to Lion, but you can buy Lion.
But you can buy Lion only through the App Store, right?
Right.
No, you can get Lion from... You can get a disk.
They finally changed that policy?
I go to the Apple Store and say you want Lion. They give you you have to have a disk.
For the old, for the new installs.
Yeah. So you put the disk in, you upgrade to Lion. Going from Mobile Me to iCloud, I just finished doing it, but
yeah.
You know,
it's not fun.
For an Apple thing, I think they sort of, I don't know. It seemed a little irritating to me, but Well, okay. it's easy to do. It's just that my iTunes login is different than my mobile me. So when I moved to iCloud, it moved my mobile me stuff. And so it considers my mobile me account my iCloud account, not my iTunes account, my iCloud account. So it's, you end up with two accounts, and so I don't know if that's bad, but it just seems inefficient.
I don't think Apple is selling a CD of Lion, but they are selling a $70 thumb drive of Lion.
Oh, well, there you go.
So you get a thumb drive, and you can install Lion from it.
Yeah.
Looks like that's how they're doing it.
And so that's about the same as just buying both Snow Leopard, upgrading to that, and then upgrading to Lion. Is that right?
It's quite possible, but you don't want to do that double path. It would be a bad experience.
Mm-hmm. It just take a long time, and then you have to.
Lion is like $30 on the App Store.
Yeah,
so
that's what I should do. And you buy with a thumb drive. That's the best way to go.
Well, I would prefer to buy it with a thumb drive rather than an optical drive. I mean, that's mostly because it's less likely that you'll have an optical drive in your device than a USB access to it. Isn't that strange, Miles?
Yeah, I mean, if you have a laptop that's a Air,
So because of this call, let's talk a little bit about going to the cloud, the iCloud thing. There's something kind of creepy about, and maybe I'm just alone here, but all of a sudden everything's syncing up and up in their servers.
I haven't used it.
I haven't either.
I've been using it, and I got to tell you, there's nothing better than working the cloud. I've been using Dropbox. It's made my life so much easier. I've gone from carrying gigabyte drives around with SCSI connectors and a briefcase, and I've done all these things. The cloud is like the best thing that's going to happen, and whether you realize it or not, a couple years from now, I can't believe I live without the cloud. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, having been a little more old school, there's something that makes me uncomfortable that my thing is updated and I didn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just not used to something doing something for me.
Yeah.
I'm not
without your explicit directions.
Without doing it, it feels like I go to work and I open iTunes and hey, all my songs are there. You know, from my how'd that happen? You know, there's an iSync thing now, and then they upload all your music. You can upload all your music to this thing. And it's just it's really convenient, I think, for people who are new to computers. This is going to be awesome. For people who, like us, have been around a while and are used to sort of
doing it ourselves, it's a little weird.
It feels uncomfortable.
It feels like the car is parking for itself.
Yes.
Right? You're like, wait a second.
Press the button and it'll parallel park for you.
Yeah,
no!
I would use it, except for the fact that I have information for calendars in Google Calendar. And Google Calendar and iCloud do not coexist peacefully.
But your iCal can add a Google Calendar account. I've done it on mine because I have a work account that they're using Google or Gmail for the managing the email stuff. Mm-hmm. And I added the Google account to iCal. And so it's another calendar that connects with iCal, but it does work.
Yeah, and it goes back to your iOS devices?
Yes, but it goes to my iOS devices. It runs across.
But it is complicated. I mean, there's a few issues there with how these work.
It's not pretty.
I'm using a different. I'm not using iCal on the. I'm using a different product. It's called BusyCal, which has some other features like better syncing between different types of.
But
products.
You have to keep iCal open for BusyCal to update.
No, I don't. No, iCal's never opened. Yeah, it's totally. It uses the same storage facility, but I don't know what's going to happen when I go to Lion. It's one of the concerns I've got.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, and so I am doing the iCal in the sense that I'm backing up my phone through iCal, which stopped backing up on my computer and didn't do the context connection, but I don't have Lion going. So I'm in a situation where I'm not really using the cloud, but it has all my data. Yeah. It's kind of creepy. So, Lauren, are you interested in going to Lion? Is that something you want to do?
Yeah, you know, I guess I need to because you can't get iCloud without...
Not on your desktop.
...without doing Lion. So I'm going to have to do Lion. Are there any security concerns about iCloud? I mean, we've been talking about this.
I wouldn't think that
Apple's betting a lot of money that it's not a problem.
Yeah, that wouldn't be really an issue.
Well, it's an issue.
It's an issue, but I mean,
it's totally an issue. But right now, there's no exploits about it.
Yeah.
I mean, just the design of it's a little creepy.
Mm-hmm. And so, is there going to be a concern when Mobile Me kind of ends? Is Mobile Me going to be replaced by iCloud?
Yeah. I mean, really, you can think of iCloud as just a better Mobile Me.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's the same deal. It's just that it's more integrated with the operating system, so it happens in the background a lot easier.
And the move is seamless. I mean, I did it.
Once you make the move, it's been fine.
It's not an awful thing. It's just everything's newer. You get more space for free.
And Apple's already been taking care of all your data with Mobile Me. So you're not even changing the relationship you have with Apple, really. You're just using a different product.
And
they're forcing your OS.
Because you used to have to pay for Mobile Me. And iCloud gives you 5 gigs free.
Right. 5 gigs is not very much data. I already have it full, and I don't even sync anything to it.
I pay for the update.
Yeah, I'm probably going to do that
for
too.
A lot of people.
Lauren, thank you so much for the call.
Yeah. So there's not going to be any problem. I put gallery. I put it in, you know, gallery space online with images.
That data will still be accessible once you move.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Well, certainly. Thank you. Good luck.
Appreciate your help. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, from Aptos, Elizabeth, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, no problem.
Good. I'm calling. The first call reminded me a little bit of my problem, but I'm getting all these junk calls from Jamaica. And I used to get them occasionally, and, you know, other junk calls occasionally. Mm-hmm. But recently, I have at least one a day. And when I put them into the do not call list online where they supposedly research this things, it almost seems like it was getting worse, so I stopped reporting them all. My phone number is on my website, but that's been there for many years. And the only... I entered a contest recently for Cirque du Soleil, which I think would be very secure.
Yeah, that's probably not the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, your phone number is on the website.
Is it your cell phone or your regular phone?
This is actually my business line. It's not a cell phone. And then once in a while I get one on my home line, but it's much more rare.
So your business line's more common?
Yeah.
And your business line's on your website?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, once the phone number is out there in the wild, people can just call it. Yeah. The thing that's difficult about this is that it's starting to get cheaper and cheaper to call. You know, the reason why we have so much spam on email is it's free to send email, right? There's no cost, really, to bring in servers. Phones have been traditionally a little more expensive to make full calls on. There's a little bit of loss every time the person answers the phone if they don't make a sale. But now with IP calling, that becomes less and less an issue. There seems to be loopholes for that, and that's why we're seeing the spam, call spam, increasing. How many calls a day are you getting?
Now I think it's down to maybe one a day. Sometimes it's been as much as three, and it started
What you can do,
about, a month or two ago.
What you can do on your business line is just always get a caller ID for it, and then when you see calls that are outside the areas, if you will, just don't answer the phone, or answer the phone and hang up.
Jamaica's a very specific area code.
Yeah.
I don't normally answer that.
What are they selling?
Well, answering it and then hanging up is actually better for you than not answering it.
Oh, really?
Because that way they get dinged a little bit of money, if there's any money.
Well, they're always, like I said, 95% or more of these are from Jamaica. Or once in a while they're from the U.S., but there's someone with the same accent and the same... They always say... I mean, I have a last name, but they always say Miss Elizabeth.
You know what's probably happened is your phone line's probably listed somewhere in Jamaica as a business. It's probably something like that.
Oh, that's weird. And they always say you've won a contest. I mean,
I would do is I would, since you have a business line, I would contact your phone provider and say, look, I want these kind of calls blocked. How do we do that?
And they said they can't. I mean, they're all the same area code, and they said they can't do that. And they said they would charge me, even to do one. So that's what I wondered, if you knew a way around that.
Well, if we did.
If I could block all the calls from Jamaica, that would be great.
If we did know a way to stop the spam calls you're getting, we'd all be driving Ferraris and living in mansions right now, because we'd be highly sought after.
We'll work on that, guys.
All right, we'll be on that.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call. I'm sorry about your problems.
Thank you so much.
One thing is we do reach a large audience. Maybe someone does have a good solution. So if we do get a good solution from somebody, we'll mention it on next week's show.
Great.
And also on today's show page up on the website. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, we probably got... I don't think we've got time for any more calls, guys. We only got a few more minutes of the show. But we do probably have time for a news story. One of you guys got something that we didn't get to that's really good. Al, please.
Yes. It's official. To protect your baby's brain, turn off the TV.
That makes sense.
This is something Miles might be interested in. A decade ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics suggested that parents limit TV, okay, by children that are under, say, two years old. They were basically saying this based on common sense. I don't know. There wasn't a whole lot of research done into it. But now the research has finally come to fruition, and it's matured. And they're saying the AAP is now have now released a science-heavy policy statement saying that the verdict is, as far as babies watching TV, it's not good and probably bad.
Okay.
And the reason is that they give is that it distracts babies from play, which is an activity that is known to have deep developmental benefits. So, you're better off just letting your kid entertain themselves than you are sticking them in front of a TV because you think it's going to be educational. And this is based on children that
like
are under...
baby Einstein stuff?
Yeah, that baby Einstein stuff is, you know, don't even... This is for babies under 2 years old.
Al, thanks a lot. Now I got to think of another baby gift to give Miles instead. Darn. It's going to give him a big stack of baby Einstein.
I have no problem with this. I don't have cable TV and... Yeah. We have a big yard to play.
Yeah, and right now you're getting sleep.
Perfect.
Soon, my man. Al, I hate to go back to you, but you're here. We have a few more minutes. Any crazy USBs?
Oh, yes. There's always crazy USBs.
In a second, we'll talk about them.
Okay.
Yeah? Okay, good. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Trox. We also have Al Luckow and Miles Elam. And GeekSpeak's the registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence, used with permission. Al, what's the crazy USB of the week?
Well, you know, we've heard a lot of USB heating things. Okay, so many of these things.
Like foot warmers?
There's the USB foot warmers, and I think there were...
USB aromatherapy.
There was hand warmers.
There was a mitten one. There was actually a cushion warmer.
You can sit on
them.
You got
the bodies covered. The body's totally covered with USB devices.
Now there's USB knee warmers. Okay.
Okay. And the body wasn't covered.
Yes. I think there was a small portion of the knee that had not been covered by some sort of USB device that could warm it.
Literally, these are what they sound like, right? They're like gloves that you put on, or mittens you put on, or now knee warmers you put on, and then there's a cable you plug into your computer.
Yes.
And the cable does nothing but provide power to warm these things.
Yeah. That's why they call these crazy USB, or I call them crazy, because there really is no thing. And I'm trying to figure out when I'm going to see, you know, the USB warmer for the left pinky ring finger, you know.
No, but that would be covered with the mittens. And
probably would.
We didn't get the ears.
I don't think I've seen.
No, you've covered.
I think there has been earmuffs. USB earmuffs.
Absolutely.
I can't think of anything that it really needs to be warmed.
How about elbows? Can I make money if I come out with a company?
I think if you were first to market with a genuine USB elbow warmer, which elbow? But either elbow? Would you have to buy two? Well, one work on both.
You might be able to make it like a health thing.
Well, if you divide it up so you have to buy a right and a left, you might make more.
Okay. So I'm not going to do this.
Okay.
But this is a gift to our entrepreneur listeners. Yes. If you make an elbow-warming USB device, we'll specialize it. We'll invite you onto the show to talk about it.
Because we don't think it exists.
But if it did exist, it would be a crazy USB of the week.
Exactly.
Thanks, Al. We'll be back next week.